Many a year, September is a tough one for stocks. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. August was a strong month for U.S. stocks. The Nasdaq rose 3.8% in the month just concluded. The Dow rose 2%. The S&P 500 rose 2.2%. But while past performance should not be a guide, I note that September's can be rocky. And in early trading today, the Dow is down 154 points, 0.6%. The S&P is down 0.3%. The Nasdaq right now down 0.5%. Maybe it's September. Jeffrey Cleveland is chief economist at Payden & Riegel in Los Angeles. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
You know, I was thinking October is the bad month for the stock market because of the history of crashes, including 1929. But actually, look, September is the time that historically people have been selling.
Well, that's right, David. Vacation is over. There are plenty of things to be worried about on a global basis. To start off, there's $11 trillion in U.S. dollar-denominated debt globally. That's up pretty dramatically over the last decade, and that means that any rise in U.S. interest rates and the U.S. dollar is an issue for global bonds.
All right, couple that with concern over the burgeoning trade war and Brexit, but all that was true in August, and the stock market went up.
You know, the issue with Brexit is Mark Carney says, you know, the central bank chief at the Bank of England says he's going to play cleanup rather than be proactive on Brexit. So that makes markets worried. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to what is the economy doing and how are corporate profits working. Last week, we looked at corporate profits, and usually corporate profits are down 10% before 8 of the last 9 recessions. And last week, got good news on corporate profits. They were up 7.7%. in the second quarter versus a year ago. That's the best reading since 2014. So as long as we're making new highs on corporate profits, David, I think stocks, despite all the concerns, can continue to move higher.
All right. I'll call you if things change. All right, Jeffrey?
I know you will.
Jeffrey Cleveland is the chief economist at Payden & Riegel. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Crude oil is above $70 a barrel this morning in New York, up 1.2% with what could become Hurricane Gordon, bound for landfall in Mississippi and Alabama tomorrow or perhaps late tonight. A fellow named Seth Frotman quit his post the other day as the student loan watchdog at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He said the Federal Bureau wasn't doing enough to protect the more than 40 million Americans struggling with student debt. His departure comes as multiple state and federal law enforcement agencies try to crack down on scam artists who prey on people trying to pay back their loans. Gary Young reports from WBUR in Boston.
Student loan scams can take many forms. For Boston University graduate Amelia Manny, it started with a phone call.
This company said that they were reaching out on behalf of where I got my loans from.
Manny says they sounded official.
They knew where I went to school, what I majored in school.
And the person on the line promised everything she needed, lower monthly payments and a lower interest rate on her roughly $100,000 loan.
They said that they were just going to be collecting the payments and then they would put them towards the loans.
But that never happened. A few months later, Manny's loan servicer notified her that the $1,500 she'd paid this new company was nowhere to be found. Michelle Grahalis is an attorney with the Federal Trade Commission.
I think, you know, honestly, many consumers are in a vulnerable position regarding their student loans.
The FTC estimates there are about 42 million people with federal student debt. Last year, the agency and about a dozen state attorneys general launched a crackdown they labeled Game of Loans after noticing a spike in complaints about deceptive practices.
Sometimes there are claims about, you know, the consumer's monthly payment that may not be realistic. Companies often pretending to be the federal government.
So far, it's resulted in dozens of FTC actions, including several lawsuits.
Well, I think this has been a growing problem.
Mara Healy is the Massachusetts Attorney General. She says Boston University grad Amelia Manny is one of the lucky ones, as her office was able to get all of Manny's money back. But
we continue to see so many students negatively affected by this industry.
And with the U.S. Department of Education proposing to make federal student loan forgiveness even more restrictive, Healy says scam activity could get even worse. In Boston, I'm Carrie Young for Marketplace.
If you're one of those who wishes you could clone yourself to get everything done in a day, this may seem odd to you, but a new survey finds that many people think they could get their job done by about 2 p.m. The survey is from the HR tech company Kronos, which, disclosure here, is one of this program's corporate underwriters. Mitchell Hartman reports.
So, think you could do your job in less than 8 hours a day? Nearly half of employees surveyed by the Kronos Workforce Institute said they could do their job fine in just 5 hours a day if they could do it uninterrupted. That's based on a voluntary online poll of more than 3,000 working people in the U.S. and seven other developed countries. Researcher Dan Shaw-Bell says Americans lead the pack in overtime, with nearly half of U.S. respondents putting in more than 8 hours a day.
Americans feel like they have to always be busy, and people start asking questions if you have downtime. That's the social norm.
Carl Van Horn at Rutgers University suggests another reason so many of us don't want to leave work: economic anxiety after the job losses of the Great Recession.
People still feel trapped and worried, unwilling to take the vacation they're entitled to because they're afraid they'll be replaced.
40% of Americans surveyed by Kronos want a 4-day work week, as long as they don't lose any pay to get it. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Unless you think I only do 7 minutes, 27 seconds worth of work in a day, given the length of this segment, I'll have you know that doesn't include all the time I spend having very profound thoughts about our journalism. And I add paper to the printer sometimes. Plus, Tracy asked me just the other day to sniff to see if the milk for the coffee had gone bad. So I have a lot to do around here. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.